Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Elise Thatcher.
And I'm Barbara Platts. A man visiting the Roaring Fork Valley has died in a rafting accident.
Local restaurants, businesses, and a lot of other folks have been preparing for the decadent Food and Wine Classic in Aspen.
Meanwhile, some families nearby don't have enough to eat.
We sit down with three Pitkin County Commissioner candidates.
Residents hold vigils for victims of the mass shooting in Orlando.
And there'll be more security at the Denver Pride Fest this weekend.
That's coming up on Mountain Edition. A 58-year-old man died after a rafting accident in Aspen yesterday.
The man died after falling from a raft into the Roaring Fork River. Officials identified him later as Maryland resident James Abramitis. Yesterday's accident happened between Henry Stein Park and the Aspen Business Center along the slaughterhouse section of the river. It's running especially high right now due to a variety of factors and has Class 4 rapids. Alex Burchetta is with the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office and says at 11 a.m. they received word of the accident.
Right actually after we got that call, at the same time we had an open space ranger who radioed into the same dispatch center to notify us of the same situation.
Five agencies responded but were unable to revive the man. He had been in a party of six on a commercial trip run by Aspen Whitewater Rafting. Law enforcement closed the Rio Grande Trail for a period of time after the accident. Houston resident Natalie Cawthon Alfaro and a friend had been biking from Aspen to Woody Creek but were cut short at the closure.
They had an ambulance, a couple other vehicles, and there was a gentleman coming out and just saying, we're going to have to turn you around. There's just too much going on. We've had an accident.
The Roaring Fork River was running at about 1,700 cubic feet per second yesterday. The accident took place in a section of river where a 44-year-old Los Angeles man died 2 years ago. As of last night, the Pitkin County coroner was still working to determine how the Maryland rafter died. An official said there aren't any immediate clues showing what might have happened. The Food and Wine Classic in Aspen is here. Around town, businesses are preparing for one of the busiest weekends of the summer.
Large trucks and tractors closed off Monarch Street by Wagner Park this week, delivering everything from tent supplies to porta potties for the upcoming festivities. Town has started to fill up again after a quiet spring off-season. All the drinking and dining establishments have opened for the summer in anticipation for the biggest foodie event of the season. In the Grand Tasting Tent alone, there are more than 300 wineries and restaurants being represented. That number doesn't include the numerous parties, seminars, and tastings that take place over the 3 days, which begs the question, how do local restaurants stand out? Devin Padgett is Food and Wine's producer of special projects. He says many businesses participate in the local restaurant program. This was started 5 years ago to give Roaring Fork Valley dining establishments the opportunity to be under the tent for one of the five sessions. At the start, there were only 6 to 8 restaurants that participated. This year, there are more than 30.
They don't have to prep and staff and get ready for 3 full days. They can stick to their restaurants and, you know, feed the masses, but also participate for one grand tasting here with us.
Some of the restaurants that will be in the tent for a grand tasting include Chef's Club, La Creperie, Canici, and Brunelleschi's, though others, especially newer ones, are perfecting their performance on the homestead. Wendy Mitchell, the owner of Meat and Cheese and the new cocktail bar downstairs from the restaurant Hooch, says she doesn't have any particular strategies for standing out over the weekend. They just stick to what they are good at.
We're in a great location. We have a beautiful patio, and I think if people want to come out. And then downstairs, I think the idea is just to provide a place for people to relax that's not a disco, but it's open late. We serve food late, and it's just reaching a few of the things that aren't currently available in the market.
Another establishment that opened less than a year ago is Aspen Kitchen. Head chef Matt O'Neill says they have some private late-night parties planned for Friday and Saturday. They will also be opening the patio around 3 each day for people to enjoy. All of their events will be held at the restaurant since this is their first go-around at Food and Wine.
We really wanted to keep the focus here, keep all our chefs here, all our staff in the building so that we give the best product at the restaurant, and then maybe next year we'll do something.
So whether it's under the tent or on their own turf, local restaurateurs are gearing up for arguably the biggest weekend of the summer.
The Food and Wine Classic in Aspen starts tonight, and some of the world's top chefs and cooking personalities are in town. The way these people have come up in the culinary world is different, though. As technology has changed, so is the way chefs have to market themselves. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
If I had to judge how good technically a chef is, I probably would ask him to do an omelette.
That's Jacques Pepin. He's one of the most well-known chefs in the world. He got his start in television back in the 80s, a time when he says cooking wasn't exactly the most respected career choice.
Any good mother still at that point would have wanted their child to marry a doctor, a lawyer, but definitely not a cook.
But since then, he's made his passion for cooking into a brand.
I am a mashed potato maker.
Pepin was one of the first people to make a living off hosting a cooking show. It was on PBS.
And cook it so that I have fairly large curd of egg.
Since the 80s, though, there's been a shift in how cooking shows and marketing yourself as a chef have changed. Kathleen Collins wrote a book about the history of food on television and says from that decade on, it wasn't just about being a good cook.
The person could be a very, very good, skillful chef, but if they don't have the personality, as one executive told me, the TV chops, they're not going to be a good cooking show host at all.
Hugh Atchison is one of the biggest names in cooking right now. He had a few successful restaurants in Georgia. Then he competed on Top Chef on the Food Network. Recently, he's appeared in a video by the food blog Eater, where real chefs make bad recipes.
He's got this big dime bag thing, paper bag, dime bag. I kind of like it. So let's do a little riff on that.
Atchison makes a fried shrimp cocktail from a cookbook written by the rapper Coolio. It's basically as far away from Jacques Pepin as you can get. He sees social media as a thing that's just part of what you have to do as a chef. And the Eater video, he says, was an extension of his personality.
I love making fun of this precious industry that I'm in, which includes cookbooks and things like that.
Though he's quick to point out his established cooking presence before his television appearances, he says he wants to have more levity in the industry. It's social media, and being funny is one way to do it.
And that report is from our arts and culture reporter, Patrick Fort.
The Arts and Culture Desk at Aspen Public Radio is funded by the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation with a mission to support the arts, community, and outreach.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elise Thatcher. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
Many visitors will plunk down thousands of dollars in Aspen this weekend to experience the creme de la creme of food and beverage. That's while some people in the Valley work to stretch $20 to cover an entire week of food. Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bechtesh reports.
I'm at a photo show in the El Jebel Community Center titled Hunger Through My Lens. It's a collaboration organized by Pitkin County Health and Human Services and nonprofits Hunger Free Colorado and the Aspen Community Foundation. Residents experiencing food insecurity were taught photography and given cameras to document what hunger looks like for them. A photo of a stack of tomato paste cans has the caption, "I don't know how to cook with this." Another image shows a string of fish caught from the river. Supplemental nutrition assistance. The Roaring Fork Valley has the most underutilized hunger assistance programs in the state. Health and Human Services Deputy Director Mitzi Lettingham says the photo project is a step toward gaining insight into a problem on the local level.
What really does it mean to be food insecure in Pitkin County? We believe that people are, but what is the nature of it and what keeps them from wanting to have a public program to help them?
The 8-page application for food stamps is one deterrent. Supplemental documentation is also required regarding family size, income, and other bills, as well as an in-person interview. These elements are further complicated if applicants are illiterate or don't have access to transportation. All that trouble gets you an average assistance amount of $1.50 per meal. Kathy Underhill is the executive director of Hunger Free Colorado and has struggled for food assistance herself in the past.
When you are filling out forms and answering in questions and kind of laying your life open to a stranger, the very last thing that you feel is entitled. It is the most humbling of experiences.
Participant Erin Rogers and her family did fill out the forms, but were denied assistance. The cost of living in this region is not taken into account, and so the income reported by her husband was deemed too high. Yet, this is Aspen. His chef's salary doesn't actually cover the cost of living and food for their four boys. Last fall, when facing an exponential rent hike in Carbondale, Rogers and her family were forced to choose between housing and food. They chose food. Her photos show her sons in front of the van they lived out of as a family.
When you're poor, it's like you're less than. But poor people are not bad with money. Poor people are like really good with their money because they know like exactly how much they have to pay, what bills they can push back. And that was us. You know, I would go to people and be like, I need help. I can't manage our money. And it's like, actually, you just don't have any.
In Colorado, hunger hits children hardest. One of Roger's photos of her sons was especially moving to Mitzi Lettingham.
The kids around the empty table saying, this is what it's like when you don't know what's for dinner. It's a great illustration of, hey, you know, what if you were in your house and your parents hadn't prepared any food and there wasn't any food coming and you're 6 years old? What are you supposed to do? And that's our biggest fear with the little ones.
Children under five are the demographic with the highest chance of being in a hungry household. Hunger Free Colorado's Kathy Underhill points out that even impoverished kids who are fed regularly tend to be unhealthy because high-calorie processed foods are cheaper.
We see obesity and malnutrition exist in the same child. So at the same time that you are laying down myelin in your brain, and if you have iron deficiency anemia, which is shockingly common, you're talking about lost IQ points that you can never get back, no matter what the future interventions are.
Underhill says hunger should not exist in 2016, and that there are solutions out there for feeding all Coloradans. There just isn't the leadership needed to get it done. Locally, Erin Rogers and her husband have started a catering company and set up a food truck at the Basalt Market. Connecting area ranchers directly to consumers cuts out packaging and distribution costs, and hopefully makes eating healthy that much cheaper for families like hers who are in need. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Aspen resident Scott Ryder is one of three candidates for Pitkin County Commissioner. Voters are choosing between the three now, and ballots have a final deadline of June 28th.
We spoke with all three candidates about why they're running. First, I sat down with Ryder. As with each contender, I asked Ryder to choose a location that represents the biggest issue he sees in the county. We sat down on a bench near a batting cage along a lush field in Aspen.
So we're sitting outside the front of the Aspen Recreation Center. To me, what this is really best exemplifies is that there seems to be a call to go back to the good old days. And as much as I appreciate that, I think that's like me, I'm 58 years old, is me saying, I want to be 25 again. Sounds great, would love to do it, just ain't going to happen. And as much as I grew up here and it was great in the good old days, but there's a lot of really great stuff now, too, that we didn't have. And the rec center, I think, really exemplifies that. And I was one of the key characters that got this thing built and funded. And to me, this is really about family, kids, and team sports and organized sports. I'm a hockey coach and have coached hockey and soccer, 27 different teams over the years. And I see the kind of impacts that has on kids in terms of socialization and just being part of a team.
Why run for a county commissioner? What is it that you would like to accomplish in that role?
Well, that's two questions. The one is to why run is that I'm local. I've been here forever. I love it. I've always been motivated by politics. And I've always felt like it's important to give back. And perhaps there's some selfish issues as well. I want to keep Aspen small. I don't want it to grow like crazy. I want to protect the environment. I want to think of ways that this community ecosystem can be fully functional. And I want to find ways to keep our seniors and inspire our young adults to stay and prosper.
It's a long list.
That's a short one.
So as far as growth, are you referring to like the city building, the county building, or tell me a little bit more about not growing too much?
Well, it's really a function of what kind of growth to me. We can't take care of everyone. The place is too small, and we've built a ton of employee units and free market units. But I think the rec center here is a great example of good growth. I think that affordable housing is generally an example of good growth. In the county, the kind of growth that people are concerned about is large employee housing complexes being built out in their community, and I'm not for that. But I am for adding affordable housing in the whole county, but in a very small individual way. The Woody Creek Caucus in their master plan, which is really quite a good document, they say, we'll do our share on affordable housing, but please don't jam it down our throats with a developer or a government doing it. We'll take care of it as individuals. And I think that represents a really neat opportunity for us to create affordable housing in a small-scaled way and also create a relationship between the free market and affordable that really starts to bridge the gap between the two.
Yeah, speaking of housing, a significant issue here, what do you see the county's role being in addressing that issue? And on a parallel note, tell me a little bit more about what you're saying. I mean, it almost sounds like requiring more mother-in-law units instead of, say, building a complex of some kind.
Well, just right off the bat, I'm not a big require guy. I'm more of an incentive guy. The role of the county has diminished over time. They are 50-50 partners in the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority by right, but not by money. They're not contributing enough. They're not doing enough, in my view, to get more affordable housing mitigation. I do believe in affordable housing mitigation, which means that when someone builds a free market unit, there is a component that says you have to help us house the employees that are going to service the home or the community. I believe in that concept. And I believe that the county is not doing enough on that front, and that's a big reason that I'm running.
Scott Ryder, thanks for taking the time to talk.
Thank you, Elise. It was fun.
Scott Ryder is one of three candidates for the Pitkin County Board of County Commissioners. We'll have interviews with the other two contenders after this break.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Barbara Platts. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Let's continue with our conversations with candidates in the primary election for a seat on the Board of Pitkin County Commissioners. Earlier we heard from Scott Ryder. Now we'll hear from Brush Creek Village resident Greg Poschman. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen spoke with him at two places that Poschman says are at the heart of why he's running.
I chose to bring your audience to the S-Curve today because it was the noisiest place I could think of at 2 p.m. in the afternoon as people are lining up to get out of town. But I think this area is emblematic of a daily traffic, transportation, and congestion issue, and I'm going to do the best to see if we can alleviate it. One of the immediate thing that pops into my mind is that we have almost three lanes of width in this road here. Could we possibly alter the highway alignment so that we could have two cars coming in on the up valley in the mornings and two lanes that is going out in the afternoons? That might help move things more quickly.
How do you see the county playing with the city on this issue? Because as you know, as well as I do, there's been over three dozen votes on the entrance to Aspen since the 70s. The county will vote and then the city will negate that vote and then it'll go back to the county. So how do you rectify that?
Well, I think we're all going to, maybe all of our interests are going to be more aligned as the problem gets worse. And I think everyone agrees it's getting worse. I would like to see more people telecommuting. perhaps with our development approvals, we make certain that the people building and developing are reducing traffic as much as possible.
So we've moved over to the base of Tyhack, where it's a little quieter. We can reflect on the valley and more of a county view. What differentiates yourself with the other candidates?
Well, right off the bat, there are a couple things that I think everybody should know about my candidacy. This is the first time I've run. It had never occurred to me to run for an office. I didn't really aspire to it. It was suggested by some friends, and so I floated the idea, and everyone said, yes, you should do it. You're the kind of person who should do this, primarily because you don't want it, but you should do it. And Plato said that the only qualified candidate should be one who is drug kicking and screaming into the position. So here I am. What differentiates me from the other two candidates really is that, one, I'm not a developer or a speculator in land in the valley, and my opponents are. And I think that makes a big difference because county commissioners have a lot to do with land use decisions, policy setting, and I think I know how hard it is to avoid or even, the appearance of a conflict of interest. And that does worry me.
Greg, what is Pitkin County's role in the Valley's housing crisis? Do you think the county should be in the business of developing affordable housing for the general population?
You know, I'm nervous about that. I think I would prefer to see private people come in and offer a solution. If the ski company needs more employee housing, I would like to see them make a proposal to work with the county and maybe others to develop housing. And I'm also looking at valley-wide solutions. You know what? Not everybody can live in Aspen, nor should they. Not everyone has the absolute right or guaranteed entitlement to live in Aspen. I think we should be looking at resident-occupied housing as the main rule. And then I also think that we should be inviting people who need housing for their employees to come forth with solutions.
What is the single biggest thing you want people to know about you?
I've lived here my entire life. I'm heavily invested. I'd love to just explain, and that's why I brought you here to Tyhack. We're looking out across the valley. In the early days, there were development plans for Hunter Creek, which we see now as pristine. I think a lot of people who've come here in the last 40 years might not understand or realize what was done by the forebears of mine in the Pitkin County government, who downzoned at the appropriate time, causing a lot of strife and struggle, but what they've done is created what we have today here.
That was Greg Poschman, candidate for Pitkin County Commissioner in this month's primary election. He spoke with Aspen Public Radio's news director, Carolyn Zachariasen.
The last candidate in our series is Hawk Greenway. Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bechtesh caught up with the first-time candidate.
I'm walking down the Rio Grande Trail with Hawk Greenway, one of the candidates for county commissioner. This is his first elected office that he's running for. One treasure of the county for Hawk is the trails and connectivity, so we're out here today enjoying that. Hawk, can you tell me why that's an important part of the county?
Oh, indeed. I've been on the Open Space and Trails Board for 18 years, and we've been growing this trail network and the connectivity throughout the county. I just think it's where most of our residents get to access the open spaces and the bounties of nature that we actually have here in the Upper Valley, throughout the entire valley.
There's three candidates. What sets you apart from the other two?
I think, first of all, my experience with 18 years as a volunteer that demonstrates my passion and dedication to protecting the natural resources here in Pitkin County. We've made a difference there. You know, recently we were at the Woody Creek Caucus. I was somewhat surprised to see the opponents willing to back away from trails and actually looking to pull trails out of the open space program or to reduce the funding on it. To me, that's a fundamental challenge that we have is balancing trails and wildlife, which I think we do really well. We want to protect the wild public lands here in Pitkin County. To do so, we need funding. We have the funding through this public resource, through public funds, but the public needs to be able to access those public lands. So to me, that's one of the main differences that I have with the opponents. I'm a firm believer in public access to public lands. One of the things that trails allow you to do is manage that access.
Housing in the valley gets mentioned over and over again. How involved should Pickens County be with the housing?
Well, Allison, it's a great question. I think that when you look at APCHA, that's the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority. So Pitkin County has a seat at the table. It's a part of our requirement. I've long thought we wouldn't have a community in Aspen if we didn't have the affordable housing program. One of the things that I hope to bring to the table is an ability to sit down and open the lines of communication. I've been very impressed from the open space perspective at the ability of this at the staff level for the government agencies to work together, and I'd like to bring that to the extent that one person can make a difference. I'd like to work hard to make a difference at the Board of County Commissioners level.
Is there anything else that you haven't mentioned yet that you want to make sure our listeners know about you?
They might know me as the Hutmaster Hawk. I've run into many of them on the trail out to the Alfred Brown Hut system, where I managed that for 18 years. We managed to upgrade the system. They might know me as a hockey parent. I have a couple of boys that have been through the Aspen Junior Hockey Program. My wife is, Shelley Suplee, is also a hockey player, so I'm a hockey parent and spouse, which means I do a lot of driving to the hockey games. I'm a pilot. The airport is going to be a big issue, and we're looking at a new terminal, and then they're actually looking at moving the runway, which on the surface of it seems absolutely insane until you look closely into it and see that it is for more efficient airplanes. So I think that in terms of addressing climate change, it's going to take, you know, like all hands on deck and every little thing that we can do.
All right, again, I've been speaking with Hawk Greenway, who is running for Pitkin County Commissioner. For Aspen Public Radio, I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison.
That was Pitkin County Commissioner candidate Hawk Greenway. He spoke with Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bechtesh. Go to our website to hear our interviews with two other candidates. That's aspenpublicradio.org. The primary election ends June 28th.
Residents in the Roaring Fork Valley held vigils this week in memory of the victims of last weekend's mass shooting in Orlando. For people attending Denver's Pride Fest in the coming days, higher security is in the works. Capitol correspondent Benta Berkland reports.
The executive director of the state's largest advocacy group for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community helped organize a vigil for the shooting victims at the Trax nightclub in Denver on Sunday. Dave Montez says there's a sense of shock, sadness, and anger in the community. Ahead of Denver's massive Pride Fest, he advised the LGBTQ community to continue to stand against bigotry and hatred.
We have to rise above the angry rhetoric. It was a gay nightclub. It was targeted because there are gay people who were in that nightclub. We don't want that to get lost in the coverage.
Many public officials have called the attack terrorism, but Montez says the target also matters. When tens of thousands of people converge for one of the largest pride fests in the nation, security measures will include fences and even metal detectors. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Barbara Platts.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. To hear this show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. News director Carolyn Zachariasen talks with a panel of local journalists about the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.